Part 1. Introduction. Welcome to Cracking the TCP Code, presented by Cooper Mills Lawyers and tcpcode.com.au. This podcast explains where the Telecommunications Consumer Protections Code came from and outlines what it is. The podcast has a companion resource book, also available for download, from tcpcode.com.au. We'll be referring to the resources frequently, so be sure you have a copy handy. Whenever we refer to a resource, we'll allow a little time for you to take it in. And the final item in the resource book is the script for the podcast, in case you find that helpful. Part 2. Telco Industry Self-Regulation. To make sense of the legal basis of the TCP code, we need to go back to 1996, when the Australian Federal Parliament passed the telecommunications law that has underpinned the Australian telecommunications industry during the tumultuous, deregulated years since then. That law came into force as the Telecommunications Act 1997 on 22nd April 1997, and we'll call it the Telco Act. It's interesting to note that in early 1997, Australia had just one licensed telecommunications carrier, the company we know today as Telstra. Since then, 338 other licenses have been granted, with 195 licenses currently active. And for every licensed carrier there are on current numbers, about five or six carriage service providers who don't require licenses but use the carrier's networks to provide retail services to the public. That means that somewhere between 1,200 and 1,400 businesses are at the centre of what we call the telecommunications industry. The new telco law included various tools for regulating the new communications marketplace. Later we'll mention a tool called an industry standard, but right now we're interested in one called an industry code that's provided for by Section 117 of the Telco Act. Section 117 is set out in full in Item 1 of the resource book. We'll give you a few moments to scan it, and then we'll walk you through it. Okay, let's step through Section 117, but starting with Subsection 2. This actually requires the Australian Communications and Media Authority, ACMA, to register an industry code. But if you go back to Subsection 1, you'll see the list of things that has to happen, including a lot of things that ACMA must first be satisfied about before Subsection 2 applies. So the fact is that ACMA has a lot of discretion about whether a proposed industry code is registered as part of the law or not. Subsection 1A says that the first precondition to an industry code is that ACMA is satisfied that a certain body is representative of a section of the telecommunications industry. In this case, that body was Communications Alliance Limited, which is the closest thing the Australian telecommunications industry has to a representative industry body. Subsection 1B then says that this industry body must have developed a code dealing with the participants and activities in that section of the industry. Again, it was Communications Alliance that developed the TCP code. Subsection 1C requires that the representative industry body must give its proposed code to ACMA. In fact, Communications Alliance provided several drafts to ACMA, as we shall see in a moment. Subsection 1D involves ACMA assessing the proposed code and reaching two conclusions. First, that where the code impacts the community, it provides appropriate community safeguards. Second, that where it does not impact the community, it is simply appropriate. Subsection 1E requires that ACMA is satisfied about two more things. First, that the representative body published the code and invited industry submissions within a certain time. A later subsection says that it must be at least 30 days. Second, that it considered any submissions it received. Subsection 1F requires another two things. First, that the public has been allowed a period, again at least 30 days, to make submissions. Second, that any public submissions have been considered. Subsection 1G requires that ACMA is satisfied that the Australian Competition and Consumer Commission has been consulted about the code's development. Subsection 1H requires that the Telecommunications Industry Ombudsman has been consulted, where the code relates to the telecommunications sector. Subsection 1I preconditions registration of an industry code on ACMA being satisfied that at least one representative consumer body was consulted about the code's development. In the case of the TCP code, that included ACAN, the Australian Communications Consumer Action Network. Subsection 1J applies where a proposed code deals with certain matters relating to privacy, such as protection of personal information and intrusive use of telecommunications. In that case, ACMA must be satisfied that the Information Commissioner has been consulted. Subsection 1K applies where the code touches on matters covered by the National Privacy Principles, which will be soon known as the Australian Privacy Principles. In that case, ACMA itself must consult with the Information Commissioner and reach the view that the Commissioner is satisfied with the code. If all of those subsections A to K are satisfied, ACMA must accept and register the code proposed by the representative body. Now, from a legal point of view, all I've just been talking about describes what happened. It must have happened, because we have a code that ACMA has registered. But there's more to the story than that 11 legal boxes were neatly ticked in the right order. So here's some of the real story behind the code. Part 3. The Road to the Code. The Original Six Codes. The 2012 TCP Codes story really starts back in 2003. Back then, Communications Alliance didn't exist. The Australian Communications Industry Forum was considered to be the industry's representative body. And it proposed an industry code to regulate information about telco billing practices. It was registered by the Australian Communications Authority, that's the predecessor of ACMA, as ASIF code C542-2003. In 2004, ASIF proposed another code about telco prices, terms and conditions. That was eventually registered as ASIF code C521-2004. In the same year, ASIF sponsored a complaint handling code, and that was successfully registered as ASIF code C547-2004. In 2005, ASIF developed a code dealing with consumer contracts, and that was registered as ASIF code C620-2005. 2006 saw ASIF move on to the subject of credit management, and a code about that was registered as ASIF code C541-2006. Finally for now, in 2007, ASIF oversaw the development of a code to regulate churn processes, and that was registered as ASIF code C546, 2007. So there we were, 6 codes in 4 years. You can see them listed in item 2 of the resource book. But there were 2 problems. The first was that the codes never showed any teeth. Despite the fact that the Australian Communications Authority, and later ACMA, could legally step in and enforce the codes, they didn't really do so. So, from the start, the codes had little traction with the industry. Many telcos didn't even know they existed, and those that had heard of them regarded them pretty much as optional. The second problem was that the codes were badly written. Mostly, they were worked up by 6 basically separate committees with not enough time and without enough access to top-class legal writers. So the codes were often sloppy and vague, and 6 of them taken together didn't constitute a coherent collection. The 2007 consolidation. By 2007, Communications Alliance had succeeded ASIF, and somebody had the idea of consolidating the 6 existing codes into a single volume. There were some good reasons behind this, such as increasing the consistency of drafting across the various topics, making it easier for consumers to know their rights, and breaking the old codes into a volume of rules and a second volume of guidelines about complying with the rules. In item 3 of the resource book, I've extracted the 2007 code's own statements of the purposes of the consolidation. But the 2007 code was not intended to change the substance of the 6 prior codes. It was all supposed to be about cleaning up the form. As the code's introduction notes, the TCP code, that's the 2007 version, is designed to preserve the rights and obligations set out in the 6 existing codes. New or modified obligations were considered to be outside the scope of this project. However, where identified, these have been noted on an issues list for future consideration. In a nutshell, the fate of the 2007 consolidated TCP code. The account you'll get of the impact of the 2007 TCP code depends on whom you ask. Nobody in the telco industry took the entire code to heart, but a small number of responsible players gave considerable weight to parts of it. But overall, it's fair to say that most telcos ignored it, and many had never even heard of it. Also, the regulators did no more to enforce the 2007 code than they had its 6 predecessors. So much so that the ACMA chairman Chris Chapman welcomed the strengthened 2012 replacement code with the remark that compliance with the TCP code was no longer optional, implying that the earlier version was virtually unenforced, and that's a fair assessment. Reconnecting the customer. The issues uncovered. Through 2008 and 2009, ACMA became increasingly concerned at the level of consumer dissatisfaction with telecommunications retailers, especially as reflected in complaints data from the Telecommunications Industry Ombudsman Scheme. As ACMA saw it, the key area of concern was customer care, and it explained that phrase saying, "Customer care includes the information received from a telecommunications provider about a product or service, how easy it is to contact them, how quickly they solve a problem, for example, with a bill, whether they do what they say they will, and how easy it is to make a complaint and have it resolved. By early 2010, the ACMA was ready to act in the consumer cause. The result was an inquiry and report, both titled Reconnecting the Customer. The outcome presented a pretty bleak picture of life as a telecommunications consumer in Australia. ACMA said, "Based on the information we collected, we found that overall many consumers are dissatisfied with their experience of customer care in the industry. This dissatisfaction occurs regardless of which service provider they are with and what products they have." Some issues that were highlighted in the report included: customers find it difficult to contact their service provider, particularly by telephone. Customers find it difficult to have problems resolved in the time they expect, especially for bills. Customers receive contrary and inconsistent advice about services. Customers frequently experience bill shock, which occurs when a customer receives a higher than expected bill or sees their prepaid credit run down faster than expected. In item 4 of the resource book, we've set out the regulator's more detailed comments on the issues we've just mentioned. It's worth reading them carefully, because it is the ACMA's convictions about these issues that explain its dogged approach to subsequent negotiations with the industry. Reconnecting the customer. The causes identified. ACMA considered that it could identify root causes of many consumer complaints. In brief, it particularly noted that advertising didn't really explain telco plan prices. Marketing material didn't make it easy to compare plans and make a good choice. Confusing terms were common, like cap, when used to describe the lowest monthly amount a plan could cost. Plan structures were becoming more complex, sometimes because that suited the telcos. There was no way to compare customer care before a consumer signed up. Billing calculations were hard to understand and track across billing periods. Customer care agents often ignored complaints, deliberately or otherwise, and didn't escalate them. Again, the report's comments around these issues explain its thinking about where the solutions lay, and in turn, very largely explain why the 2012 TCP code ended up in the form it did. Spend a moment reviewing item 5 in the resource book. Reconnecting the customer. The recommendations. Inside the ACMA, the Reconnecting the Customer Inquiry and Report became known as Reconnecting the Customer, or simply RTC. RTC's headline recommendations were these: clearer pricing information in advertisements. All providers should clearly disclose pricing information in their advertisements in a way that will make it easier for consumers to compare plans. Advertisements should no longer use words that could be confusing for customers. Item 6 of the resource book gives more detail about this recommendation, drawn from the executive summary of the RTC. I'll give you a few moments to read that. Improved information about plans. All providers should give customers a simple, standard explanation of what is included in a plan, how bills are calculated, and other essential information they need to know about the plan, similar to a product disclosure statement. Item 7 of the resource book provides more detail about this recommendation. Again, it's drawn from the executive summary of the RTC. I'll give you a few moments to read that. Comparisons between providers. Industry will be asked to provide more information about how good their customer care is, particularly how quickly they resolve customers' inquiries. We also think that providers should have customer service charters. Item 8 of the resource book provides more detail about this ACMA recommendation, as it was explained in the RTC's executive summary. I'll give you a few moments to read that. Tools to monitor usage and expenditure. All providers should enable customers to track their usage and expenditure on data, calls and SMS during a billing period to help reduce the risk of bill shock. Item 9 of the resource book is extracted from the RTC's executive summary of this point. I'll give you a few moments to read that. Better complaints management. All providers should have a standard complaints handling process that meets benchmark standards and includes timeframes for dealing with a complaint. Item 10 of the resource book provides detail on this point as explained in the RTC's executive summary. I'll give you a few moments to read that. If you want to understand how the ACMA relates to the 2012 TCP code and how it will interpret clauses that are less than perfectly clear and what kinds of behaviours and breaches will push its buttons, you only need to reread the items referred to above. Whatever else the TCP code was intended to deliver, it was those outcomes, and they are the outcomes that are close to the ACMA's corporate heart. What the ACMA did next. Consider what we know so far. The Telecommunications Act provides for industry self-regulation. By 2007, the industry had developed a consolidated but ineffectual code that related to a wide range of telco activities and functions. In 2011, the ACMA decided that telco behaviours needed reforming. As the ACMA itself described its next step, we have told industry what changes we think are necessary in order to address customer care problems, and we have invited them to make the necessary changes in their self-regulatory code of practice, the Telecommunications Consumer Protections Code. TCP code. If those changes are not made, or we think that the changes made in the TCP code will not lead to better customer care, we will consider other options. These include making rules that will apply to the industry in order to make sure that industry practices improve. The ACMA was offering the industry a chance to upgrade the 2007 TCP code to address the new ACMA agenda that flowed out of the RTC inquiry and report. The thinly veiled threat was that if self-regulation didn't deliver, the ACMA would impose an industry standard, a legal instrument that it could design and enforce to achieve the outcomes it wanted. That resulted in a tug of war between the ACMA and the telecommunications industry that ultimately produced the 2012 TCP code. The journey. It's fair to say that the final version of the 2012 TCP code was a vigorously negotiated outcome. At the Communications Alliance event where the code was launched, ACMA General Manager Jennifer McNeil bluntly said, "I'm pleased that I'm still on the guest list after the extensive interactions that have taken place between our organisations on the TCP code over the past year." At the ACOMS dinner last week, Communications Alliance likened the ACMA's persistent, dogged pursuit of particular outcomes in the TCP process as sticking like porridge to a blanket. Can I signal that there is more dogged persistence to come? The draft code went back and forth between Communications Alliance and the ACMA during 2011 and 2012, with the industry doing its best to water down the regulator's wish list, and the ACMA mostly holding its line and issuing more thinly veiled threats that if the code development process didn't deliver a satisfactory document in an acceptable time frame, ACMA would walk away from the exercise and resort to an alternative regulatory strategy, an industry standard under its direct control, as permitted by the Telecommunications Act. According to those in the know, the TCP code was one draft away from being finally rejected by the authority when industry produced a draft that was acceptable. In July 2012, ACMA announced that what is now the Telecommunications Consumer Protections Code 2012 would be registered and take effect from 1 September 2012. Part 4. The ingredients. At this point, it's worth thinking about the ingredients that were mixed to produce the 2012 TCP code. There were 6 pre-2007 codes written by 6 different committees, pretty inconsistently, and with pretty poor drafting. There was the 2007 revision of the TCP code that tried valiantly to unify the earlier documents, but with limited success. There was ACMA's wish list arising from the RTC inquiry and report, and it's fair to say that ACMA was more concerned to see those points implemented than that the new code was, overall, a first-class document. There were several committees charged with drafting chapters of the new code. And finally, there was a rush of amendment and drafting in the final weeks, as Communications Alliance tried to harmonise industry and regulatory positions. In summary, lots of history, lots of pages and words, lots of drafts, lots of committees, lots of agendas, lots of pressure, and lots of last-minute changes. Predictably, the code contains lots of mistakes and lots of uncertainty. In this podcast, I'm not going to analyse the very significant deficiencies in the TCP code, but you'll find extensive discussions of some of them online at www.tcpcode.com.au. Look under the category Criticising the Code for more information. Part 5, the 2012 Code. The 2012 Telecommunications Consumer Protections Code consists of 9 chapters and, including formal parts, runs to 102 pages. Item 11 of the resource book is the table of contents of the code, and you might care to turn to that as we outline what the code says and does. Chapter 1 is a formal chapter and contains no rules. Chapter 2 contains the code dictionary. It doesn't create any rules, but it is critical for understanding the rest of the document. For instance, Chapter 8 of the code imposes special rules on the way telcos deal with urgent complaints. And the ACMA is already taking telcos to task for failing to correctly identify urgent complaints and comply with the rules about them. If you don't study the definitions of complaint and urgent complaint, you have little chance of understanding when the special rules apply. Chapter 3 sets out some general rules, plus a couple of miscellaneous items. The general rules mandate clarity of language, quality of information, accessibility of information, general legal compliance, and courteous dealings with consumers. In addition, Chapter 3 requires that a telco customer must be allowed to deal with the service provider through a representative, such as an authorised representative, who may act on the customer's behalf, or an advocate, who acts as a voice for the customer, but with no powers of agency. Chapter 4 moves on to consumer sales, service and contracts. I'm going to give you quite a lot of detail about this because it makes quite a few new demands on telcos. This chapter is largely concerned with what the TCP code calls offers, defined as a current standard in-market plan containing pricing that is made by a supplier for the provision of telecommunications products, which is available to any individual consumer or consumers as a class, and includes, without limitation, such offers made in advertising. This is one of the more challenging definitions to understand in the code. But whatever an offer is, Chapter 4 requires that it is communicated clearly and accurately, and in a way that is not misleading. Chapter 4 also introduces the Critical Information Summary, an all-new TCP code initiative that involves a one- or two-page summary of the key points of an offer. The idea is to provide consumers with a pithy, reasonably standardized product disclosure statement that can be used to understand, assess, and compare products. Then Chapter 4 goes on to require that telcos make available, on their website is the obvious place, a range of information about plans and products, any hardware they supply, and the warranties that apply to them, their billing and payment practices and options, how to estimate what level of capacity a customer should be looking for in a plan, their post-sales support, the coverage of any mobile products they sell, the arrangements around international roaming, and what underlying network their services are supplied on. The chapter then mandates that telcos must try to address identified consumer needs and creates an obligation to provide an appropriate remedy where a customer signs up on the basis of inaccurate information. Chapter 4 then deals with advertising practices and prohibits headlines that are unreasonably qualified by fine print, unjustified use of the word unlimited, unjustified use of phrases like no exceptions and no catches. Unjustified use of the word free. Failure to fairly disclose flagfall or connection charges. Failure to fairly disclose the fact that advertised pricing for a product depends on buying it as part of a bundle. Certain pricing misrepresentations. Exaggerated network coverage claims. Using the word cap in relation to a product that does not feature a true maximum spend limit, which the code calls a hard cap. Making claims about broadband speed that are misleading or unrepresentative of real-world experience. The chapter then has some more positive rules, such as that the particular terms of special promotions must be communicated to customers. Recontracting customers shouldn't just be rolled over on their old plans if a more favourable newer plan is then available. They should be informed and given the option. Telcos must train relevant staff about advertising requirements and have adequate advertising review processes in place. Chapter 4 then introduces the TCP code's unit pricing scheme that applies to postpaid mobile plans that ask for a minimum spend and offer a higher dollar amount of included value that might be spent on calls or text or data, and also applies to postpaid data plans that have an included data allowance. For these plans, telcos must advertise the cost, including flagfall, of a 2-minute national mobile call, one national SMS, and a megabyte of data used in Australia. There are rules about how and where these numbers must appear. Next, the chapter moves on to sales practices. For instance, it requires sales agent training, monitoring of sales agents, monitoring of complaints about sales agents, accurate product description, genuine customer consent to a sale, fair sales practices, and sensitivity to the needs of different consumers. After that, Chapter 4 deals with customer contracts. They have to be easily available. They must be complete and clear. Where the customer is a non-business customer, standard form contracts must not contain unfair terms, including 4 specific types of unfair term listed in the code. Next, the chapter turns to customer service and requires that it must be effective. Customers must be told how to access it. Average wait times must be monitored. First contact resolution is to be encouraged. Proper customer service records must be kept. Customer care agents must be properly trained. The code expects telcos to actively seek customer feedback on their support experience and to use that to improve the quality of care. There are a few other things, but you can already see that Chapter 4 is an extensive code for the way telcos advertise, sell, and engage with consumers. Chapter 5 deals with billing by telcos. It mandates better billing information, minimum standards of billing disclosure, clear billing formats, free access to historical billing information for a reasonable period, prompt billing, accurate billing, provision of sufficient information to verify charges, minimum payment options including at least one free method of payment, rules about direct debit arrangements, including a default rule that extraction must not occur before a customer has had 10 working days to check the bill. Chapter 6 deals with credit and debt management. There's an emphasis here on assisting customers to avoid unsuitable plans, track and manage their spend, and not get in over their heads financially. Telcos are obliged to provide and publicise spend management tools, and these will include actively notifying certain residential customers when their plan usage reaches 50%, 85%, and 100% of their entitlements, as well as other requirements. Chapter 6 sets out proper processes to be followed when a customer is suspended or disconnected for debt or credit management reasons, and it specifies and mandates fair credit management processes. It also requires a working, fair and meaningful financial hardship policy that must be made known to customers, especially when it appears they are in some financial difficulty. Chapter 7 deals with three situations: where a telco wins a customer from another telco, where a telco buys a customer base, and where a telco changes the wholesaler that's providing the underlying service. The chapter mandates proper consent when customers churn and proper information when a customer base is being transferred. Chapter 8 deals with complaint handling and mandates what for most telcos will be a much enhanced complaint management process. Now, the complaint handling process is highly prescribed, including special and very broad definitions of what must be treated as a complaint, and a special definition of an urgent complaint. Transparent, efficient processes. Issuing of trouble tickets for all complaints. Maximum times for acknowledgement, response, resolution, and implementation of resolutions. Fairness. Information to customers involved in complaints. Specific and extensive record keeping, and regular analysis of complaints data to identify systemic and emerging issues. Chapter 9 of the code has no even approximate equivalent in any earlier version of the code. It's intended to ensure that this time the TCP code is taken seriously and complied with. A new independent body is created called Communications Compliance, tasked with education and monitoring code compliance and ultimately reporting serious non-compliance to the ACMA. Annually, telcos must lodge documentation with Communications Compliance, or ComCom as it's become known, attesting and demonstrating that they actually do comply. If a telco can't say that it fully complies, it must lodge a compliance assessment plan that identifies its shortfalls and details the strategy to address them. Every telco must have a documented TCP code compliance plan, prepared consistently with the Australian Standard on Compliance Programs. Telcos will be required to submit to ComCom data on their performance under the code based on specified metrics that will be published by ComCom so that consumers can make an assessment of competing service providers. And of course, the ACMA, as enforcer of the TCP code, always stands ready to deal with non-compliance as well. It is not required for them to wait for references from ComCom. Part 6, Wrapping Up. Well, our brief was to get an overview of where the 2012 TCP code came from and what it is, and we've done that. I want to give the last word to the ACMA, which explained its attitude to the code in a feisty speech given by General Manager Jennifer McNeil when the code launched. Try this ominous comment, for instance. In the course of the RTC inquiry, our compliance approach was criticised as insufficiently vigorous. Apparently, the industry want more investigations, more directions, more court cases. Well, the good news is that we have heard these criticisms, and over time you will see a shift of emphasis from education to investigation, direction, and prosecution. If you want to understand how the ACMA intends to approach and enforce the ground it has gained under the TCP code, General Manager McNeill's speech is compulsory reading. It's set out in full in item 12 of the resource book, and in a moment I'll leave you to read that in full. Just before I do that, I'll say thank you for joining me on this TCP code history and overview. And please visit www.tcpcode.com.au for in-depth commentary on the code and an extensive range of compliance materials you can buy and download.